Welcome to the Deer Society Podcast. Here's your host, Brian Lemke. Yeah, this is who I am.
I'm a deer hunting man. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Deer Society Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Brian Lemke, joined with Mike Dukart, JJ Dukart, and Dan Kaufman. Today, we got a cool topic to talk about, a hard one to talk about sometimes, but we're going to be talking about tracking and what happens after the shot. So, you know, we put in so much time and effort and all this planning and thought process to get us in the position to get a shot on a deer. And it seems a lot of the time that after that, you know, you can throw it away just as fast as you created that opportunity if you don't pay attention when you're tracking and understanding where your hit is and the moves to make after you make the shot. You know, we've all seen as hunters lots of different hits, good hits, bad hits. We're just going to talk through a lot of those today and, you know, kind of evaluate some of our experiences, and hopefully you can learn something. So, you know, maybe this fall when you shoot a deer, you have a little extra knowledge in your back pocket. So, JJ, let's kind of start it off with you. I mean, what do you do after you shoot a deer? You know, what's the first thing you try to evaluate and do in making a decision?
Yeah, I tried to go back to kind of the tips that Mike gave me when I was first hunting. You know, try to mark some points after that shot where you last saw the deer run. Try to look at for a specific tree, last visual of the deer. Try to, you know, get a gauge on, you know, did he tail up? Is he running fast, walking slow? Just try to get kind of a general feel for what happened there. Obviously, you know, if you can see the impact of the shot, that's ideal too. But just try to get some of those things and remember them, because it seems like, and I'm terrible at it, that adrenaline rush takes away all memory and you just forget absolutely what happened. And I know there's several times where you come help me track a deer and, you know, which direction did it go? And I say, you know, it went to the left and the deer goes to the right. And I have no idea what happened there, but your mind is just not letting you absorb that information. So try to get some visuals if you can. And then, you know, we do a lot of filming and we were talking about this yesterday, like even just like a Tacticam or some small point of view camera over the top of you, kind of just, you know, capturing anything can be super helpful too. You know, that's just outside of the tracking portion, which I think these two on my left are going to dive into a little bit more, but, you know, just gathering that information, if you can get just the littlest cues, you know, where'd you hit the deer? What did he do? What did it look like? What reaction? Where did he last go? Some points to just start the search. That's kind of step one. I don't know if you guys want to expand on that a little bit, but that's kind of the basis I go for.
Obviously, this is a huge subject. And when I say huge, I mean an aspect of hunting that to me is just as important and just as big, if not more important, than the hunt itself, than the food plot, and then everything you do preseason, everything you do guiding. I look at it like, you know, if you're willing to spend the time to sit in the woods and spend all that time to put an arrow in a deer, ethically and morally, you owe it everything legally possible to find it and actually, you know, have the opportunity to show that deer off and what it deserved. I mean, if you're going to put an arrow in it, you owe it to it to find it if it's not dead. You know, it's like JJ said, the one thing I always say is never trust your eyes. Don't trust your eyes. There are too many times, and I've seen guys with way more experience than me, guys with less experience with me than me, you know, and myself, I've done it tons of time, where you think that shot was perfect. And now that I've been running a camera for several years, I've found out more often than not, you can't trust your eyes. I'm sure it has to do a lot with what you said as far as like your adrenaline's going 100 mile an hour. You know, you think you saw what you saw, but when you pull that camera out, you find out these deer can duck, they can jump, they can move forward. It all depends on what footing they're on, how alert they are when that bow goes off. It can change everything. And even as far as trajectory and hitting ribs, it can change things going into the deer. I mean, there's just so many aspects of tracking. It's a great subject, to be honest with you. I mean, I take a lot of pride in tracking deer, and I think tracking deer starts before the shot. I mean, it's set up, it's everything.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm going to take a little different approach to it, you know, me with the, you know, thinking outside the box thing, but I look at the, you know, I'm going to take what these guys just got done saying, but I'm going to kind of ball it into a kind of a little different perspective. When it comes to tracking the deer, you have to think about a couple of things, and this is the way I assess it. You work this whole season to try and get this deer. You have all these things going on. You have the strategy. You have the hard work. You have all these things, food plots, all the things that are going on. And when that moment of truth comes and that adrenaline starts to kick in, it's almost impossible to absorb all the tiny little details. You know what I mean? Unless you're at a point in your hunting career, I guess, where you lose that emotion when you're shooting a deer. I'm not there yet, and that's why I continue to hunt. But to pick out those little things that you need to really focus on to find the deer, you know, if you look at it as a big picture, there's different types of reactions based on your hunt. Are you gun hunting? Okay, that's going to be a completely different experience. Are you bow hunting? Was that deer right underneath you? Was it a long shot? Were you confident? How did the deer react? You know, they can react differently in different, just because of the behavior of the deer. You know, some deer are tougher and just amazingly tough. You can put a total kill shot on that deer and it can go such a long distance and do so many different things. This year I had that experience with a crossbow. And looking through a scope, I've never shot a deer looking through a scope. I've never shot a deer with a crossbow. So everything that I was conditioned to was completely different and new to me, and it caught me off guard. Now, I smoked this deer, but I got down there, and I didn't see the type of sign that I expected. So learning from a big picture perspective, I think, has a lot to do with being efficient with recovering a deer, too. You know, what are you seeing? Well, it's going to be different with a crossbow than it is with a regular bow. It's going to be different if you double lung it. It's going to be different if you bury it in hard quartering away and the arrow doesn't get a pass through, but you hit it in the heart. You know, there's just all the differences from a big picture perspective. And I think the best point that I've heard so far is don't believe your eyes. You know, you have to really kind of step back, and these cameras are just gold when it comes to, you know, realizing what really happened.
Yeah, you know, coming at it from the filming and production standpoint, I have had the opportunity to film a lot of different guys shoot a lot of different animals. And I can tell you, just from experience and from doing it myself, like, I think it's because you've envisioned as a hunter being in that position so many times, you've envisioned that shot, and like, you let that arrow go and the excitement's so high. Almost, I would say 90% of the time, no matter where that arrow or bullet or whatever hits that deer, the initial reaction from the hunter is smoked him. You know, I mean, we've all watched outdoor TV and seen, you know, the guys say, oh, smoked him right away. And it's like, oh, you look and you cringe and you go, well, the shot's back, the shot's this, shot's that. But, you know, my experience sitting with a hunter and, you know, seeing a gut shot and then the hunter saying smoked him. And it's like, they even, so I see it through the video screen, and you're always in that awkward position, right? And it's like, you want to keep that excitement level there, but you want to break the news to him. Well, look, we got to calm down because the shot's a little back. And they'll even go to the extent where, because they believe their eyes and they have that vision, they're in the moment, they'll even almost argue with you and say, well, no, I think you're wrong. And then we go back and watch the footage, and every single time it's like, wow, well, that shot is a little back, or that shot is a little forward. So having something, you know, all of us don't have the opportunity to go out there and have a camera guy in the tree all the time, but that's where Tactcam, you know, a camera like that is great, because, you know, we were just looking at Caitlin's deer the other day, you know, for somebody else to be able to go back and watch that, or for you to go back and watch that and really understand and evaluate then where that shot was. Again, I think that makes you way more successful than your next steps. Because when we talk about hits on a deer, we're talking about game of inches, really. I mean, think about it. Yeah, there's a lot of vital area in a deer, and we'll get into that. But, you know, the difference between a double lung and a liver or a gut or back behind that or above the shoulder or shoulder, we're not talking about a vast difference here. I mean, it could be an inch, half an inch one way, that could make a big difference in when that deer dies. Does he die? And is it right now he's dead, or is it in 8 hours or 24 hours? So there's so many variables there. And if you can, you know, add that element where you can watch it back after, man, that's a pretty valuable thing.
Yeah, you know, that's a huge deal. And I want to add a couple things to that. When you're self-filming, and this is just me, and it's not contradictory to anything that you just said, but when I self-film, and I've seen JJ do the same thing, you know, I'm always questioning, did I give it a good hit? You know what I mean? And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because there's so many things going on with getting the camera. Did I get the deer on? You know, it's just, it's that extra bit of stuff where all that information is coming in during the adrenaline rush, and you can't remember it all. You know, so I tend to question myself. I know JJ's questioned himself on a couple of deer, and then we come back. Once again, we look at the footage. Curly, great example. Oh, I don't think I put a big hit on, you know, and he came home. I just left him. And so he comes home, we put it on the big screen. I'm like, oh my God, that deer's laying dead, dude. You smoked him. You think so? I'm like, yeah, I know so. Look at the angle of the arrow. But when he ducked, the arrow didn't get the full pass through, but I could tell where that thing went in and how he ducked down. I knew what vitals he hit. And sure as heck, we went back the next day, and there was a blood trail in the snow, what, 2 feet wide? We didn't have to track him. I just said, he's probably laying dead over here.
That may be the difference between us, Mike. You and JJ are usually the ones that are like, did I get a good shot? I know I got him on camera. And I'm always the ones like, ah, I got a good shot. Did I get him on camera? I mean, Brian saved me quite a few times on those the deer may not be completely in the picture, but and I think maybe that's because, you know, self-filming's tough. We all know that. I mean, self-filming's tough, and over the years, you know, you guys have probably learned to focus on this, and, you know, and you get them both. It's a tough thing to get matched up.
It's a good point. It's you know, like I said, big picture. What's happening in your hunt? You know, what are the elements of that hunt? And I think personalities come into play too. You know, some people are like, kill that, smoke that sucker. You know, I'm maybe either not that confident all the time, or, you know, just like to be more cautious about it. But JJ, you're going to say something.
Well, I was just going to touch on that footage aspect. You talked about Curly. We're able to go frame by frame there and see each frame of the arrow going in. And
great,
I know, like,
point.
When Chris shot a buck quite a few years back, and we went and if you watch the footage in real time, or if we saw it, like I was filming him that day, we saw the hit in real time. We both thought, like, spying, because the fletchings looked way high.
Yeah.
Well, we watched the footage frame by frame. He hit a branch, fletchings kicked up high.
Correct.
Broadhead shot down in the deer's lung heart, smoked him, only went 50 yards.
Yeah.
But the fletchings were way up in the air visually, were almost above the deer's back. Yeah. So real time, the fletchings shot up high.
And Chris was all excited about
that. If you don't have that footage, you would think, oh man, where do we go now? There's no pass through.
No, Chris was all excited about it. It was his first deer, wasn't it?
That was his first buck.
Yeah.
I told him that.
And Chris was like, yeah, you know, and all of a sudden JJ, he looks up at JJ all excited, you know, on film. And JJ goes, well, I don't know. And I could just see Chris's face just go, whoa. Like,
that was the buck at the big steep ridge line, right?
Yeah.
I remember, we talked about that, and I said, oh man, that was a great bank, because he banked it off the tree branch. Yep. Got a great shot. I mean, it really turned out to be a good shot. But that goes back to one thing I want to say too, is you were talking about, you know, filming and all that. I think one of the most important things that you can have, even if you don't have a cameraman, and I know I have it, you know, one of my best friends, Jeremy, he does it for me all the time, a good hunting buddy that you call from the stand. And he's your reason. He's your rationing. He says, I know you want to go look for it, but absolutely not. I'll be there in a few minutes. We'll look at the footage and we'll both decide whether we're going to go look for it. Because 9 times out of 10, even myself, knowing so many times and tracking so many deer and seeing this, I still get so excited. I want to go look for the deer. And it's not the time. I mean, truly, unless you've seen him fall, that if that deer's dead, he's going to be just as dead in 4 hours as he is in 5 minutes.
I'll tell you the story about a deer that I did get conservative on. That was just this last year. So I'm going to go back to my point. Understand, you really need to try and learn and understand what you're seeing based on what happened and what you're doing. In other words, I shot a crossbow for the first time, right? So I go down thinking, all right, I've shot plenty of deer. I've tracked a lot of deer. I kind of know what I'm doing here. Go down there, and I could see the bolt sitting there with the light on. I couldn't see what the deer's reaction was, so when I looked back in the camera, I did see a good high leg kick, so I felt good about that. And so I look at the bolt, and I'm looking for the sign, and I can't find any sign. Then I pick up the bolt, and I look a little more, and I'm like, well, there's red all the way across the whole thing, but it's so thin, it almost looked like it went through belly fat. And now I'm second-guessing myself. Okay, so then I smell the arrow. I'm like, well, is that guts? Is that what is going on? I smell great. Everything looked great. And you know, the information was correct, but the knowledge wasn't there. When you're shooting a projectile at that speed, it's not the same as a bull. And I didn't know that. And that was information that I was missing. And that's what set me off, okay? And then the other thing was, when I hit the deer, the reaction to the hair and the blood and everything is so much different when you pierce through an animal that quickly and that efficiently. It's going to get one or two bounds before you start picking up that information that you normally would see right below the arrow. And I didn't know that either. So I did a circle around that area, and once again, I didn't see the deer crash, but I saw him go down a ravine. So didn't really collect that information well. I thought he was on the other side of the ravine instead of the side he truly went on. So I'm saying, excuse me, I'm going to wait it out. And I waited it out till the next day. So then Chris and I go down there and I relayed this information. This is where the arrow was. This is where this was. And we couldn't find any sign. So immediately we went to the area where my brain said he went down the ravine on the left side, because I assumed he did because he disappeared, right? My eye saw him go up the hill and disappear. So if I'm on the left side of the ravine, imagine a deer going up a ravine and you're just off to the side of it. And if he goes up the left side, you'll see him go up and you assume he disappears going over the knob, okay? Well, he was actually on the right side of the ravine when he ran up. So when he ran up the ravine, he crashed dead. I didn't know that because he didn't kick. He didn't do nothing. Well, we'll explain this in a minute. So we go down there. We can't find any sign. We start immediately going up the left side of the ravine. Can't find any sign. We're looking all over the place. Can't find him. Get down to the river, do a grid search, come back, come all the way up. And now we're really upset, because that's another thing about tracking is when you can't find the sign, you get frustrated. And then your mind starts to go on you. And then you're thinking this and that. And then you get, you know, anxious, and you're doing things you shouldn't probably be doing. And it's a terrible feeling, to be honest with you, when you feel like you put a good hit on a deer and you don't find it. And so we're going back up, just frustrated, kind of give up. And all of a sudden, Chris goes, what's that? And we look over, and that deer didn't go 35 yards. Now, that's happened to me twice. I helped another guy, and Brian thought his deer went a certain way, so we traveled it, searched. I mean, we were out there for 2-3 hours. Finally gave up, went back. His dad came out with him a little bit later, and his brother, deer was 35 yards away. You know, so those are experiences. I just wanted to kind of bring that out. The mindset and the big picture, you really have to understand information, understand your experiences, and learn from them. And, you know, maybe it would have been better for me to understand, talk to somebody who shot a crossbow before and know a little bit more about how it works.
Yeah, I think all of us, and that's a great point, you know, all of us have, I think, a mentality based on what those experiences are, that we have, you know? So, like, we've all experienced bad hits. I think I've experienced a lot of bad hits, just, you know, I've made some, but I've experienced other people having bad hits. So, like, my initial approach is kind of the same as what you're talking about. It's conservative more than anything. I mean, I've made good hits on deer, and erred on that conservative side still. To your point, you know, if that deer is dead now, he's going to be dead in 4 hours. Now, there's unfortunately more variables that come into play than that. So you know, weather's a big factor. You know, you have a rainstorm coming in and it washes away that sign, that can get sticky. You have coyotes, you know, the last thing you want to do is shoot a deer. Coyotes get on them and ruin part of the deer. You know, so there's a lot of variables that go into that. I play always more on the conservative side, and in a little bit here, I can tell a story about we had last year where, you know, there was a gut shot deer, and we had to leave it lay till the next day, and then and didn't end up getting the deer until 2 days later, and actually ran into him alive the next day. So that was a game of cat and mouse. It's interesting because, Dan, you bring up the team of people, you know, or the buddy that you call. I know around here, like Deer Society, when somebody shoots a deer, it kind of turns into like a CSI because, you know, like we're texting back and forth, JJ and Mike and Chris and Brian, and everybody's like back and forth. Okay, what do you think? And it's like this analysis starts happening. And honestly, it'd be interesting to film that sometime because it's or just show like a text message thread from yeah. everybody trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, but it's cool to get those outside perspectives because in reality, again, we go and have a mentality based on the experiences we've had. I think in those circumstances, the more opinions that you can get, the better, because, you know, somebody else might have an exact shot like that or an experience like that. And the more information that you can have on the front end, the better.
Yeah. And I'll just make one comment before maybe you dive into that story, or maybe Dan has one on a track, but at least when you're shooting a bow or a crossbow, you have that arrow or that bolt for evidence. You know, I know a lot of people that if you shoot a high power and you don't drop the deer, and they do take a, you know, a 90 degree turn, like you just said with your deer or Brian's deer, they don't go very far. Like sometimes there's not a lot of blood. And if without having an arrow, knowing that you actually hit the deer, if you're shooting a rifle, I don't think a lot of people know they even hit deer and they just give up quicker.
That's a great point.
Because I know, I mean, without saying who it was.
Well, we've seen
it happen this year to someone I know. And, yeah. and the deer, I found the deer, you know, 40 yards away from where the shot was, and they didn't think they hit it.
But. And we've had situations where, you know, people, and we don't let people come in on our land during the gun season because we want it to be a refuge. We don't hunt it that much either. So if a neighbor shoots a deer, the rule is, and they know, you know, they got to contact us and we'll go in and we'll go do the look. And so we've seen a lot of that. And then a lot of people that will shoot deer, and we don't know who they are necessarily, but, you know, we'll find dead deer, obviously, on the property too. And if you look at that deer, you'd be like, oh, wow, they smoked it. You'd have thought they would have looked for it, you know. But once again, it's that point. It's with a gun is totally different. You can't go grab a, you know, a bullet and say, oh, well, yeah, look to hit
smell
some bone.
You have no smell. Yeah. You have no information, really, other than hair and potentially blood or
And that hair may not be easy to find with a gun either. You know,
it's funny. I'm listening to you guys, and it's like, I guess to kind of a little history on it for me is, for some reason, at some point in my hunting life, I just took this initiative, and I don't know what it was. And I think, you know, when I was very young, I remember tracking a deer, and my dad, we tracked this thing like a mile or two. And my dad said, the deer's not dead. It's not dead. And I was young. Of course, I would listen to nobody. I think I was 15, 16 years old. I knew everything, you know. And I refused to stop. And my dad went back to the truck in a rainstorm. And I tracked it another half mile till I completely lost blood. And sure enough, I didn't find it. And I went back. But from some reason, some point, I decided to take a ton of pride in tracking deer. And it was just so interesting to me how many different scenarios and how many different things weigh in. And so I guess – at home, like where I hunt in Ohio, I'm that guy that when I hear somebody wounded a deer or shot a deer, a buddy of mine or a friend of mine, you know, I'll kind of listen in and watch social media and stuff and listen to what happened. As soon as I find that they've looked for a couple of days and didn't find it, I'm like calling that buddy. I'm like, so what was going on, you know? And there's been several times where these, you know, guys have searched for a couple of days and I start to hear the backstory of it and I'm like, don't add up, man. Have you seen him on camera? Do you have any sign that he's alive? No. I'm like, just you mind if I come out there with you and we try to find it? There's been several times where we found him. And I guess that goes, there's so much stuff that I have like in my head as you guys are talking. And, you know, and it goes back to, like Mike was talking about shooting a crossbow. And we've all been there. I've been there myself. We as hunters, Like, we have to know our setups, our systems, how they work, how everything about them. And that goes back to, we talked about it yesterday. We're not going to go too far in this because it's a controversial subject. But, you know, broadheads, mechanical broadheads.
Yeah.
For years, we shot fixed broadheads. At worst case scenario, you knew somewhat of your arrow size, your broadheads, but they were 90, 110 grain, whatever. You might have had to heat the glue up and twist the broadhead a little bit to line it up with the flexions to get it to fly better. And then all of a sudden, this mechanical comes out, and everybody loves it because it flies straighter, you know, because it don't open up till it hits the deer, and there's just so many positive effects. Well, then next thing you know, you hear people, oh, this broadhead's junk, this one's junk, and you know, and you're sitting there back there thinking, well, man, I've seen a lot of people use that broadhead, and it worked great. And I did it myself for years, not understanding my setup. You know, somebody with a 31-inch draw length and a good arrow, heavy arrow, and that big 2-inch mechanical broadhead, they don't typically have anything to worry about as long as they're pulling enough poundage. They have the kinetic energy to pass through that deer. You take somebody like me with a 27-inch, 28-inch draw length, I'm already losing a lot of that kinetic energy. So for me to throw a light carbon arrow with a 2-inch rage, I'm not going to get a pass through. And I always hear the one response I always get a kick out of is, well, if you hit it in the right spot,
yeah.
Well, let's face the truth and the reality on this. Okay, if you hit it in the right small spot, the smallest fixed broadhead that you can find will still do the job just fine. So we're not buying 2-inch mechanicals because we have every intention of hitting it in the right spot. We're buying a 2-inch mechanical broadhead, not only because they do fly straighter, I guess, but because we want a better opportunity at that marginal shot. So then when you tell me, well, if you hit it right, it goes right through, well, that's great and everything, but I need to know what it's going to do on the marginal shot because that's the only reason I'm spending the extra money and the time for it. But then over time, I had to learn my setup. I had to learn that I have to have a heavy enough arrow. I have to sacrifice a little speed. Therefore, I know the deer is going to react a little bit different on a 25, 30-yard shot. 18-yard shot, it's easier. But a 30-yard shot, it's going to react more. It's going to tuck down more. It's going to jump more, move forward more. But I have to know my kinetic energy. I have to know my setup to be able to use that broadhead. So to blame it on the broadhead companies, and I'm sure there are broadheads out there that aren't as great as others, some that are better than others, whatever. But in reality, until we know that we know our setup correct and we're doing that part right, we can't really blame it on the broadhead. We have to hold ourselves accountable for that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've changed myself. I mean, I used to shoot 70 pounds and, you know, the mechanical broadheads, you know, and you double lung them. And I mean, it's just almost brutal. And then, you know, you get older and next thing you know, you're pulling less pounds and that kind of thing. And, you know, I made a marginal shot with a broadhead and put it in the shoulder and didn't kill the deer. And just like, that's it. That's not me no more. I don't want to do that. I know if I would have hit that with a good, solid, you know, fixed broadhead, I would have got in deep enough and the deer would be dead. I mean, I switched. I went back to the regular broadheads now, and then, of course, you know, you want to shoot the one that you like the best just because I am pulling less pounds and, you know. But the bows nowadays, too, they get better, too. And, of course, once again, with a crossbow, none of that even matters. So, you know, I shot that this year, so that had no impact as far as the setup goes.
And this is kind of more, I don't know if you'd call it opinionated. I don't know if there's any real science behind it. But a guy that owns a bow shop that I know that's very educated is the one who told me this. If you really consider this and think about it, you take these crossbows, what are they shooting now, over 400 feet per second?
Well, I don't know. Somebody came out with one,
500. Okay, so 500 10 feet
points.
Per second.
Yeah. And I haven't shot it yet, but I might this year. We'll see.
You take a bullet and it's a lot faster than that, right? So when you take a bullet and it's a lot faster than that and it blows through that deer, it's taking stuff with it. Like it's literally has an effect that it's blowing through there so hard that it's causing organs and stuff to bruise and shake and everything else. Well, not so much with an arrow, right? Well, you take that arrow at 300 feet per second. And if you remember right back in the day, especially back in your day, Mike, when bows were shooting 190 feet per second, I mean, heck, I have buddies that shoot traditional. What are they shooting? 170, maybe? 160?
Yeah, I mean, you could, back in the day, of course, they're aluminum arrows. You watch the arrow arc at 30 yards.
You had the kinetic energy, though, with that aluminum arrow.
Oh, it would blow right through them. Mm-hmm.
But so you go back to that and you think about that and you start thinking about these fast crossbows. And there were several deer I tracked that guys were shooting these fast crossbows like that and shooting great broadheads and everything. What we were finding out, and it makes a lot of sense, and the guy at the bow shop explained this to me. He goes, you know, years ago when we had bows that were shooting 190, 200 feet per second, you know, you wanted them broadheads as sharp as you can get them. But we also know, like, what's the old saying, like, stab somebody with a dull knife hurts a lot worse than a sharp knife, right? And the way the body works, like, if you tear through an artery versus you take a razor blade through an artery, arteries are designed to constrict and pull back to stop bleeding. But if you tear through that artery, it can't do that now. It's torn open. So what he was saying is, and I don't recommend anybody doing something that they don't know 100% facts that it works, but what he was saying is a lot of his, like his crossbow, he shoots his bows, his, you know, broadheads in his target and practices a couple times. He said he don't let dings on him or anything like that. He said he doesn't mind that if he has a 400 foot per second crossbow, that the broadhead isn't 100% razor sharp, because he wants it to tear through there a little bit to cause more damage because the deer will bleed more. Now, like I said, that could be very controversial because I don't have any facts behind that or any science behind it. But to me, using common sense, it does make sense what he's saying. And he's saying that a lot of these bows are shooting so fast through these deer that he thinks that, you know, there's just not as much damage as you would think, you know. And I don't know how much it affects it, but it makes sense. It was a topic that I was interested in for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's open for discussion. Yeah. I don't know that it's rule or law, but
yeah, I don't know. I've never really thought about it that way, and I don't know that you know, it's something that I would try, but it's an interesting theory. Like you said, common sense. There's some sense to it, I guess.
Yeah,
for sure.
And me personally, but, I like I said, I have 28 inch draw length. I'm not going to try it sharp. I need that as much as I can get.
Let's throw a new angle at this thing. JJ, let's tell the story about the deer that you shot. Was it that? Which one was it? Was it the 12 pointer? Or?
Yeah, the one up on the ridge.
Yeah, the one up on the ridge.
Well, that goes back to a point earlier I made. So it was a.
There's a couple things in this story that I want to kind of point out after we get through it.
Yeah, and Brian's got a really good story too from this past year that we should dive into as well. Yeah, this buck I shot probably 10 years ago now. My bow probably was not as powerful as it was now. I think I was shooting a fixed at the time, but it was a little, you know, first light type shot. So didn't, you know, my adrenaline back then was substantially higher when a buck came in than it is now. Hopefully I can, you know, I can now keep it under control a little bit, but I was shaking pretty good.
You were in high school, by the way. I'll just throw that out.
Probably
there.
High school. Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah. It was a while ago. A
couple of years, 2 years ago?
Two, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
He looks like it. And this buck came in, it was November 16th. Buck came in behind a doe. I didn't know who it was. I could see a pretty substantial rack, but first light. So I didn't really know how big he was, who he was, what the deal was. Stood there for a while. I think it was about a 30-yard shot, and finally gave me the opportunity sitting broadside, pulled back, and adrenaline's just pumping, you know, body shaking. Released the arrow. Thought I put a pretty good shot on it, but, you know, things were just happening fast, and my mind wasn't working real well. Couldn't see more than 40 or 50 yards because it was insanely steep behind this deer. It was a bench and then just dropped off real, real fast, and, you know, you take the shot. Everything explodes. There could have been two does, but it was for sure a doe and a buck. Doe runs left. The buck takes off. I think he runs away and turns left. And, you know, I'm just kind of sitting there. I don't hear any crash. I don't really understand what happened after that shot. So wait a little while, maybe 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Finally called my dad, told him I shot a buck. And then, you know, just got down, went back to the truck and figured we'd come back and see what happened here with the shot. So then he comes back, and this is the story where, you know, I tried to, you know, understand what happened after that shot. But when I started to explain to him, you know, the deer went left. The doe for sure went left. And I think the buck, you know, followed her. That's what my mind told me that probably happened. And you were looking for blood and we couldn't find anything. And
couldn't find the arrow.
And the shot was high is what ended up happening. So no pass through, didn't have enough poundage, enough energy to get through. shot high and we couldn't find any blood. And, you know, we just kept looking, it was probably 30. I mean, it was a long time looking in just a small area trying to figure out what happened. And finally he just, I think you started finding tracks.
Yeah,
and well, you're like, which way did the deer go?
Yeah. Well then because I have a fresh mind, I didn't see it. I just was listening to him. And then I'm gathering the CSI data and okay. So he's over here. He shot at the deer over there. There was multiple deer. Here's the trails. Then I'm looking at, you know, couldn't find any signs. So I'm looking at the tracks. Well, which way did this thing bail out, you know? And I'm like, well, based on what I'm seeing here, the tracks that are dug in actually went the other way than what he thought. And I'm assuming it was because there was two or three deer there. He just, you know, his mind said, well, the buck had to go away from my shot and run away from me because I shot him. In essence, what happened is he actually came back a little bit towards him and disappeared over the ridge. So once I kind of looked at those tracks and started digging in, then I started finding like little tiny droplets of blood. Okay. And so we're gathering this information and now we get to the point where, all right, well, the deer went this direction. Okay. We got that far. Well, then I found out that JJ wasn't able to see the blood. And he could see some blood, but he couldn't see the blood that I'm seeing. So I'm seeing blood that he doesn't see. Well, then we come to find out he's a little bit colorblind. Wow. Not that he can't see red. He just doesn't see it as well as I do. So I'm picking out literally tiny pinhead specks of red blood on pine needles. And oh, here's another spot.
On your hands and knees.
Like. On my hands and knees. I mean, we're really doing this thing, right? So that's one of the points that we wanted to make out because I'm teaching, right? I'm really teaching here. So that's one of the points I wanted to get out there. Some people can't see blood as well as others too. And so keep that in mind. Extra eyeballs can be very helpful. And a fresh mind that can, you know, kind of maybe reconstruct what might have happened based off of, you know, a calm person versus someone who just went through all the frenzy is the other point. So fast forward, we're tracking this deer and I'm finding pinpricks of blood based off of footprints. Okay. And I'm like, God, this deer looks like it's really hurt the way it's running, the way it's stumbling. And then I see some to the left and there's another point. Look, if you're on the footprints and you're on the blood, look at what's going on those footprints. That tells you a lot. You know, if you see slips and you see lefts and you see rights, that's a staggering deer. You know what I mean? That's a deer that's struggling.
If blood is on, so if you don't get a pass through and you see blood on the opposite side, that's probably coming from the mouth.
Good point.
In a long shot, too. Could be.
I think one of the things I always try to do is when I get blood, I always try to pay attention to where it's at. And anytime I can get it on both sides, a lot of times, like you said, if it's spraying out the nose, it's going to kind of leave a trajectory this way. And I always try to like figure out blood. I try to look at blood when I go in the woods from here to here and here out front. And I mean, like when I'm looking at sticks or leaves or anything.
Yeah.
I have picked up more blood that I couldn't find on the ground on a leaf that he rubbed up against probably
or a
than
stem.
Anything. Yeah, or spray. And it's like, don't be afraid to, when you see a stick that looks like, man, that doesn't look right leaning over there. It may have been leaning over there before. And when he rubbed up against that and it knocked it over, and then the blood where he rubbed up against is underneath, and then you take it and look, there's blood right there. And it tells you, like, you can, like, soybeans are a great example. I've tracked deer, it's hard to track deer through soybeans, but the great thing about soybeans is if you have an entrance and an exit, you can look at them soybeans based off the height of them soybeans with the height of you and the height of the deer, and you can say, his blood is showing right here on these soybeans on this side and down here, and I was 20 feet in air, and you can start looking at that and say, that's height-wise, that's not a bad shot. I got a good entrance and a good exit, you know, or you can say, man, these are so even. And if that deer rolled like that and you got an even shot, well, maybe that's why you don't have it out of blood, because it has to fill up down here before it starts reverses having a shot.
You know, all that's great stuff. I mean, you analyze those types of things. So we're on this deer and it's just basically little pin drop stuff and getting it, and we follow it and follow it and follow it. And all of a sudden it gets to the road, the county road, a gravel road. Okay, and this is another point I wanted to kind of bring up here. So it gets to the gravel road. We know for sure the deer's right there, and I'm thinking, all right, it crosses. It's going to take an easy trail if it's hurt, and I'm going to see some blood on this hard-packed gravel road.
Light-colored limestone.
Smooth road. And I'm like, I'm going to pick something up. And so we looked, and we couldn't find anything. Couldn't find it. And only because of a past experience of mine, my very first deer I ever shot, we figured it out. So we tried everything on the other side of the road, did a grid search, tried the whole road, tried to grid search, everything else. And then it hit me. It's like, well, if the deer didn't cross the road, he's laying in the ditch. And I just looked down to my left, and there he was, laying there dead. And I didn't say nothing to JJ, you know, because you want to, you know, let him see what's going on. I said, well, maybe if he didn't go here, didn't go there. And I said, well, maybe he just stayed on this side, you know. And sure as heck, then he looked down there and did that. And we're lucky because this is hours went by. Anybody could have driven that road and picked that deer up.
It was gun season, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so he
opening
was laying there.
Gun season, nice 12-point on the side of the road.
Oh, that's yeah. Awesome.
So the point I'm trying to get at is when I shot my first deer, the same thing happened. It went over and... I'm not going to get too detailed in the story because it was a pretty wild incident, but it's the first deer I had ever shot, went hunting by myself, and I was gun hunting. And it was just say the deer quit bleeding. We'll say that. And so I was following tracks in the snow, and it crossed the creek, and I couldn't find it, blah, blah, blah. And then finally, it's like after 20 minutes, it's like, well, but it didn't cross the creek. It's got to be laying in the creek. And I looked down, there he was laying in the deadfall. So it was the same scenario. So don't, you know, progressively you're going to want to think something is real that happened. Like that deer's definitely crossed the road. Well, don't always second guess yourself. You know, if you can't find the information, step back a little bit. Well, if it didn't do that, what else could it have done? And those are two deer that we found that way.
Almost
because of that.
Every tracking job where you don't have a lot of blood, it seems like, you know, you find blood and you mark it with whatever you're...
Hat.
Yeah, your strategy is, but almost every single time you see that big deer trail going straight and you're following the blood.
Yeah.
And then you just can't find blood up there. And almost every time.
I think
you gotta backtrack.
Yep.
All right, let's regroup and let's start back.
You know, I think a big thing about that is being very detail oriented when you're tracking deer. You could be 3 yards away from where that blood starts and you're at a total loss. That deer could be bleeding like a stuck pig 5 yards over there, and you're walking this way because you thought he went this way, but he went that way, and it completely throws you off your pattern. And I think more often than not, like he was saying earlier, Mike was saying earlier, that he had to circle around. I do that all the time. More often than not, I am seeing a lot of deer that you don't start seeing that blood until 50, 60 yards out after you hit him. And that's circling. And you know, going back to what you were saying, too, about JJ, you not being able to see blood, it kind of dawned on me when he was talking about it. And for all the guys out there that may have that same situation, they actually make some pretty good tracking lights out there. And I have a few of them. And it actually changes the color of the blood. It's kind of weird. It's a purple light, and it's for blood tracking. They work awesome at night. And sometimes dusky, too. But it's weird because it changes the color. It's still red, but it's just a different colored red. If you're looking at it with a light, you wouldn't want to look at it with one of these lights and try to assume that it's liver blood or, you know, artery blood or, you know, because it just changes that color and you don't know. I mean, and another thing you were talking about earlier that I wanted to say something about is talking about when you kill a deer, like, and it's a great thing to have, is you got this huge group of guys from Deer Society that come around and they're like, let's find this thing. Now, what I will say about that is, there's been a couple times, and it's tough. Everybody wants to see the guy find his deer. Everybody wants to see positive come out of it. But the truth is, tracking deer is one of those things that someone needs to take charge of the situation, regardless of who it is, whether it be the person that shot the deer. Hopefully that guy can. Sometimes that's not always the guy who, you know, maybe he's only been hunting for 2 years, and he's asking you to help him, and he wants you to take charge, you know. Obviously, I would never recommend stepping on anybody's toes, but to me, somebody has to take charge. You know, you always want one guy, possibly two, up kind of looking for blood. But if you get five guys just walking through there, you don't even realize how much damage you can cause your track job. So what I do is I always me and another guy maybe track, and I always have one guy that's always standing on last blood. And the only thing that he is to do is to stand on last blood and just kind of try to look and pay attention and see, like, you know, does it make sense that he ran up through there? Or what it makes is, hey, guys, you know, and he'll tell us. And then we're slowly trying to, you know, find the next blood spot. And then occasionally, if we have more guys, I may send guys and say, hey, do a big circle and walk way out around and try to stay off anywhere this deer could have ran and see if you see evidence 75 yards or 100 yards, 200 yards up front that, you know, because if we can, you know, to skip that 75 to 100 yards because he goes up there and sees that. But, you know, I always tell him, stay out of that zone. There's a zone there. We need to stay out of it and pay attention. But that's a huge thing.
That's a good point, because when you're tracking blood, especially if it isn't good blood, when you're tracking blood and you're focused on the exact spot and your brain is like, you know, detailed to that exact thing, you're not seeing big picture anymore. And you get, like JJ said, every time you get back behind, you're like, well, there was a sighting there. You can see the big picture where that deer wants to go. Then you have to think about the deer's behavior. If a deer's hit really hard and it's going to die, most likely, and it depends on where you hit it. Now, this isn't true, but they don't like to, I mean, they're not going to run up a big bluff all the way to the top if they're hurt hard. They may try to, but eventually they're going to have to start going downhill if they're hit hard. And they tend to like water. There's just tendencies there, and I don't know them all, but there's a couple that once is water if they're hit real hard. Another one is, you know, they're not going to continue to climb if they're hit hard. They may start to climb, but they won't if they're going to die, they're probably not going to continue and die running uphill. I've never seen that happen. They've always turned down, and they also will dive into a thicket or a cover in that death jump or whatever you want to call it, death dive. You know, like, oh, I got to get into cover at last moment. You know, who knows? It could be blind at that time. But, so check them big, nasty thickets. Check those, you know, just read that deer. You got to see the big picture and not just focus on the blood drips. And that's why I think that's a great point about having extra people help.
I think that goes back to something I've talked about before too, is when I'm deer hunting, I always try to look at it as there's no such thing as a negative day in the woods. There's no such thing as a failure in the woods. And the reason I say that is maybe you're going in to hunt a certain deer, and you know, a lot of guys, you just haven't figured out that perfect access yet. And you're walking down that hill, and next thing you know, you look up, and the buck you're hunting, there he goes, taking off across the field, right? And a lot of guys would be like, they'd put their head down and turn around and walk back to the truck and be like, well, this day was a failure, right? It's hard to do this sometimes. It's not as easy as said than done. But you have to, sometimes I like to look at that in a different aspect. Instead of just turning around and walking right back to the truck, that deer's telling you something. He's scared and he's running, right? Where's he going to run to? Somewhere he feels safe, right? Well, where's he going to run to when you shoot him? Somewhere he feels safe, right? So you watch that deer until he's out of sight and you see where he's heading, because he is telling you where he needs to go to feel safe. And when you get in that situation where you can't find that last bit of blood and you cannot make sense of it, but everything's telling you that this deer is probably dead, well, I'd say that place he told you about a couple weeks ago may be a good place to go check out and cross grid and search it, you know, and check it out. I mean, and back to what Mike was saying too about how deer act and how they respond to the shot versus how hard they're hit. The one thing I've seen before too that really surprises me is, I think a lot of that's very true, but you also have to pay attention to the time of year. If it's a 4 or 5 year old buck smack in the middle of the rut, November 15th, there's a good chance that testosterone may push him a lot farther than what he would get pushed on February 2nd. I mean,
I'm going to add to that point. I've seen deer back in the day, gun hunting, get hit with a slug and look up at the hunter put their nose down and continue to follow like they were following a hot doe. And they were dead, and they had no idea. That's a behavior thing like Dan was saying.
Yeah, absolutely. We've all seen them do some crazy things. There's so many points that you guys just hit on. You know, I want to touch on, just before we get away from it, the group tracking thing. And I agree with you. More eyes is better in a lot of circumstances. I think you have to really evaluate that and be careful on when you do that based on where the hit is and how long after it is. So this kind of leads me into a story from last year. So, you know, I think that there's times where you want to take guys, but there's times where you don't. There's times where you want to have your bow there and you want to go in there and you want to be as quiet as possible, because more times than not, but on certain occasions, you go in there, and even if you leave them the next day, you know, guys think, well, I'm going to leave them overnight, and, you know, shoot, 8 hours, they're dead. Well, that's not true. Again, it goes to the hit, and that's about educating yourself and understanding, okay, if I hit them in the liver, how long does it take to die? I know, like, there's tons of information out there. DeerCast has a great thing in their app that's, you know, shows all these different hits and shows them on video and walks through, okay, different scenarios where this deer, it took them 8 hours to die. This deer, it took them 24 hours to die. So, like, educating yourself when you have a hit like that and trying to understand just from a body functionality standpoint how long it could take that deer to die is a big help. A perfect example is last year, you know, here in Minnesota, hunting with my wife, she hits this deer and she hits him in the guts low, right? It's interesting because this deer is so close and I'm in the tree with her. And even from the filming standpoint, like, I watch this arrow go, it gets there so quick, deer reacts, runs off. And I'm like, holy smoke, she missed. And that was my initial reaction. Now, luckily we got to go back and watch the footage and I could see the arrow there from the stand. And then really quickly started to understand that she had hit the deer.
Did she turn around and say, smoked him?
No, it was like, it was turn around and looked at me in disbelief, didn't know what happened. I mean, this is a big deer, and he was like, there was a lot of emotion in that moment. And with her being a fairly new hunter, you know, it was that feeling of the unknown, right? And feeling of disbelief and sadness almost, you know? And so I watched this deer run off, and he gets into the brush about 50 yards and he stops. And I told her, I'm like, don't move. And we sat there for 5 minutes without moving a muscle until I watched that deer disappear. And he just slowly walked off. Now that tells me, I mean, I knew after this the shot, but like a deer that's hitting the guts, that's hitting the liver, that's hit back a little bit, like that's the way that they're going to react. They get sick pretty quick. You know what I mean? They hurt. So
they
like
feel like they got a stomach ache and they're like, oh.
You'll usually find two or three beds in one spot.
Did you know he was hit at that point, or was it when you looked at the footage later?
I didn't even know he was hit at that point. You know, just based on, and I had still thought she missed, but again, it's one of those things like, we're not going to celebrate, we're not going to cry, we're not going to move all around. Like, that deer standing there, he's trying to figure
cry.
Out. Yeah. He's trying to figure out what the heck's going on. You know, regardless of the situation, like, we don't want to add another variable that he sees us in the tree, or just no extra, you know, movements needed to push him one way or the other. So the deer walks off. We evaluate the footage, you know, just on the camera quick, understands hit. We get down, we pick up the arrow there, and immediately I can see its guts. I can smell it. I can see it on there. It's that dark kind of stomach material. Well, I know there's only one thing to do at that point. It's sneak out the absolute other way. So we as quiet as possible, picked up the arrow, got out of there, right? Now there's no blood, there's no nothing there. I mean, there's, I don't even know if we found hair at that point. It was back out, wait till morning. So again, we get back and CSI starts at deer study stuff. And we're trying to analyze what to do. And I'm trying to talk to as many people as possible. And JJ was under the impression, he's like, man, you should leave that deer for, I don't know, what did you say? 24 hours.
Well, that was where the DeerCast gave us some input, and it was, 24.
Yeah, and I remember that. And then you popped out early, and we were going, oh, maybe that's too early. We kind of questioned.
Well, because of
that.
The weather factor.
Well, yeah. But you had rain coming or something.
Yes,
yeah,
so we had a big rainstorm coming in that afternoon. So I think I gave it 17 hours, and I said, here's the deal. I'm going to slip in there. I'm not going to take a bunch of guys with. I need to slip in there and evaluate just inside the woods there, and then I was going to go from there. So I didn't have an overall plan. Like, I wasn't going to go in grid search. What I wanted to do is slip in there, get to the last place that I saw that deer very, very quietly and then reevaluate based on that because I knew rain was coming and I knew that I was going to lose all sign. So I got in there. I went back to where the arrow was. No blood, obviously. No nothing. No sign. So just slipped into the woods there where I had last seen him and still no blood at this point. I mean, there's no sign, which is typical, you know, if you have a shot like that, you know. So now I'm thinking, well, okay, it's probably not, you know, it's more guts than anything. Maybe did she clip the liver, but I wasn't seeing that at this point. You know, you shoot him in the liver, typically have some darker blood, you know, eventually, but didn't see that. Well, I got to finally a place there just past where I saw him, and I'm talking just past maybe 10 yards, and I could see a bed there. And I went and checked that bed, and sure enough, he had bedded down right there. Now there was a little bit of blood and a little bit of hair in there, so I could tell that that was his bed. And I looked up about 3 more yards, and there was another bed, and I could see a little bit of blood in there. So I'm starting to put all this picture together, like, okay.
Can I stop you and ask you something real quick just to hit a subject? When you found that bed, what were the things you focused on as far as how, you know, the size of the bed, where the blood was in the bed? Is there things that you focused on if the deer got up and changed his, you know, did he stand up and switch different sides? And how far away were them beds? I mean, what did that tell you?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So, yeah, I mean, you look at everything that you can in that bed. Now, there wasn't a lot of sign there. Like I said, the sign was a drop of blood, really, in that bed. It was very, very little. So I don't think that there was a lot that you could determine based on it. And again, I had the video, so I knew pretty clear where the hit was. But I look 3 yards ahead from that bed, and there's another bed. And I go over there, and there's another few drops of blood and some hair in that bed. So now I'm thinking, okay, this deer's hurt, you know, and I know that a sick deer, it's going to take him a while to die in this scenario, but like he's getting up, he moves 3 yards and beds back down. No, he's hurt. I look another 5 yards ahead of that, another bed, another tiny bit of blood in there. So as I go, and again, this is just in like a 10 yard span, I'm dead quiet at this point, just sneaking through, looking, evaluating. Like, I know this deer's bedded a few times, but I'm not going off a lot. I go to step into that next bed, and I look up ahead of me on the ridge, and I see that deer stand up. And my heart sinks.
That's a dead deer walking.
And I'm like, oh my God, there he is. He's still alive. And he bounds down off this hill and goes down into this creek bottom. And I just stood there. And, you know, luckily I didn't get a great look at him, but I pretty much understood that that was that deer. Now, is there a 1% chance that it could have been another buck bedded there? Maybe, probably not. But like, he's only 40 yards from where I'm standing in his now 3 beds. So I stand there, I let him go. I watch, I listen, he goes out of sight, but I just stand there for probably 15 minutes. And at that point, it's like, okay, well, again, confirms what I'm thinking. He's super hurt, but he's still alive. We got rain coming, but at that point, it's like there's nothing that I'm going to do to make this situation better by continuing to track that deer. So I came out, and, you know, at this point, I'm having a conversation with my wife, and she's like, she doesn't understand. As a new hunter, she's like, you know, there's no way we're going to find this deer. And I told her, and I said, Allie, look, yeah, it's not great that he's still alive, and obviously she feels bad that he's still alive, but on the other hand, I'm like, that's a not bad thing. Like, this deer is within 70 yards of where you shot him 17 hours later. I know that he's bedded. He was in his 4th bed within that, you know, little stretch. That's a sick hurting deer. We need to give him time. Understanding where the shot was, he's going to die. So another long sleepless night. I left him go a whole another day. We got rain, you know, but I sacrificed the ability to find that sign, understanding the situation.
Quick question. And I just thinking of this from not being there, but once you seen that he stood up and then he went down, my thought was immediately through my head, you know what you should do is you should take your camera on your phone and take a picture of exact spot where he was standing and the exact spot where he disappeared down in the creek. Because once you leave an area,
it's harder to find it when you get up there.
It's out of your brain.
Big time.
You know what I mean?
Big time. Well, it's interesting because when I went, so left him a whole nother day. Went in there the next day. So now we're, 30 some hours in. And went in there and tried to go to where that 4th bed was. Even though I was only 30 yards from it the previous day, I never found it. Now we had rain and did some different things. Right. But like, you would still think that you would, but you get in there to your point, it's like, where exactly was he? But I knew the general direction he went. So now it was a matter of, again, I'm still by myself because I wasn't to that point now. I don't know. I have a feeling that the deer's, I know he's hurt, but is he dead? Is he not yet? So again, I'm going quietly, slowly by myself, go down into this creek bottom and got down there and I'm like, well, it makes sense for him to go this way. And I walked this, the creek bottom out to a point, got back, came back, circled. I'm like, well, he didn't go that way or that I know of. So I'm going to go this other way. I started, as soon as I started walking that way, there he was, dead, laying there on the side of the creek. And it was amazing. And I could tell that he had expired the night before. But the interesting thing was about that is I think so many guys would get anxious and go in there and push it. I think if I could have kept pushing that deer, that deer
for miles.
And he could have gone a long ways.
With that being said, like you said earlier before, know your area too, because there's areas where we have a lot of coyotes that I'm like, I don't want to push him, but I know as soon as I leave and a coyote crosses that blood trail, he's probably going to push him. Or a group of coyotes is probably going to push it. I mean, it happens, you know?
Yep. Yeah, so, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, there's a little luck involved there, obviously, too. I mean, a ton of luck. But I do think that the strategy that we put together kind of as a team on the front end of that tracking job really led to us finding that deer, because there are, I feel like the chances, you can put the chances against you really fast. You look at odds of finding that deer based on that shot. I think if you handle it right on the front end, go in there cautious, pay attention to the right things, good chance of finding them. I think you can make one mistake and those chances decrease by half for sure. You know, so again, it's just trying to analyze that situation. Go in there cautious when you need to, and really just, it's a patience game when it comes down to it. It's patience after the shot. It's patience during the tracking job. You know, there's so many things. So we could dive into different shots and different placements and different things. But as a whole level, being patient, taking a step back, taking yourself out of the moment, getting other opinions, and you know what? Put yourself in the position right away to be able to find that deer.
Absolutely.
So take all of your, let's just go through each one of us, and because we're kind of maybe getting a little long-winded here, but talk about, because there is so much to talk about. Maybe let's point out a couple of things that, and don't take this 100% that it's going to be true in every single recovery, but take out some points that maybe that we've all learned and, you know, kind of give it to our listeners. And so I'll start out. One of the points that I want to make up, or that I want to talk about here, I'm not making it up. What I want to talk about is
that's awesome.
Get I would facts. Say the probably my weakest point of deer recovery is what JJ talked about, because I'm a high strung type A guy, and I get so revved up when it comes to the point of seeing the deer, getting the shot, trying to get him on camera. I do a very poor job of actually staying calm and absorbing information. And so that's what I'm going to say. Let's, you know, and we're actually working on that, because, you know, we haven't even touched on dogs, but it came to us because of a guy whose specialty is deer recovery with dogs. And he talked about how we give off a pheromone or some type of scent in high stress scenarios. And maybe I shouldn't be talking about this, because we're developing a product that we feel deer can pick up on you when you get that emotional surge and that big adrenaline rush.
Horses can, they know that.
From a scent, just like dogs are doing when they're tracking the deer. And so we took that information about the dogs and we said, hey, well, if they're doing it, well, I bet you humans are doing it. And so we're trying to develop a product that will keep you more calm so you don't give off that big surge of, you know what I mean, type of
the adrenaline.
The adrenaline, yeah. And I'm going to pass it off to JJ on that right now. But that's what I'm really going to want to work on and focus on, not only from, you know, product development, but from a hunting perspective, to help hunters become more successful, because not finding a deer is the worst experience you can have. Putting a bad hit on a deer, not finding them, is the worst experience you can have as a hunter.
Yeah, I'll just hit on this real short, and then I had a point on Brian's story that kind of relates to this, but yeah, the adrenaline rush that you know, anybody can put off, whether it's dogs, human, whatnot. In the case of the dogs, it actually dried out their skin, and then they had more flaky, like dander, or no, I guess in the case of like a deer being hit, they put off an adrenaline rush in that scenario, where it would, you know, put off more dander when the dogs contract the dead skin cell, or not dead,
so
but
the,
dander.
So the deer, the dogs were picking up on that.
So everybody, yeah, their skin dries out, whether it's the dog, okay, a deer, or whatever. But in the case of tracking a deer from a dog standpoint, the deer actually releases the adrenaline and the dead skin cells, the dry skin, the dander,
gotcha,
which dogs can pick up on that.
They learn to identify that's the hurt deer and not the fawn or doe that walked by.
Yeah. And we will let the expert, Jeremy, come in here sometime
talk about that. We are working on products right now to keep the human to not go through that process nearly as much and absorb and gather more information and be a little bit more efficient in that period. You're still going to get the adrenaline, but maybe you'll think more clearly and maybe you'll execute more efficiently. And that's really what we're focusing on with this new product.
That makes great sense from a medical standpoint too, because with me being a paramedic and knowing the body a little bit, like anytime you're obviously bleeding or you're in that fight or flight mode with adrenaline, a lot, what your body is actually designed to do is the main parts of your body are right here in your core, you know, like here in your brain, right? Your arms aren't as important. And your body naturally pulls all that into the core of your body to where it's used, where it's needed the most. If you lose blood, when you get in that adrenaline rush, your heart beats faster. So, I mean, it would make sense that, you know, you would dry out a little bit with your skin because it's all peripheral and it's not going to get as much blood flow.
Yeah, and unknowingly and kind of knowingly with the phase system, we're targeting, you know, the dander and skin cells too, so kind of a different approach there. But going back to Brian's story with this deer was, what, 10 yards away when your wife shot it?
Eight
yards away, downwind. I know it's going to be a pretty epic hunt breakdown. The fact that he only ran after that shot, like, you know, 40, 50 yards and stood there and bedded 70 yards away means he had absolutely no idea you were there. And his mindset, based on the footage and what happened there, you know, hitting scrapes, I mean, pre-rut, just getting into it, like, you know, king of the world at that point. And then, you know, just something happened loud, didn't know what, you know, if he would have seen you, understood there was a predator there, he wouldn't have bedded down 70 yards away. So that's like another cue. I never really picked that up on your story in the past, but, you know, he stayed tight to you because he had no idea you were there.
I'm telling you, people, that this phase system that we've developed over the years is unlike anything that's ever been done before. And there's stories over and over and over that you would say there's no absolute way. That's not real. That's not possible. That can't happen. And they're happening with deer directly downwind. And deer, when you're on your feet at ground level and they have no idea what you are. I mean, this is happening over and over.
Well, interestingly enough, on that deer, so that deer comes out. And he wasn't going to be downwind to us until he was right in that shooting lane. And she shot him. He runs off. The whole thing happens. I did have her, after things calmed down just here, right before we got down, I threw a wind floater. Had her do it. Threw a wind floater down there to just show where our wind was going. When I got down on the ground to pick up that arrow, okay, I bent down. This is on video. I bent down. I picked up the arrow, and in my other hand, without standing back up, picked up that wind floater next to the arrow. So, there's no better proof than the wind blowing right at that deer than picking those two things up in the same, you know, same time bending down. I mean, that deer was directly downwind. It was crazy. He had no idea we were there. And, you know, that's part of it. You look at that deer staying alive for, 30 hours or whatever it was, and only going that far. 30 hours is a long time alive. Like, they can go, they're tough. So imagine if you're bumping that deer, you give him an adrenaline boost and a reason for him to go somewhere. You know how far a deer can go? I don't care if he's hurt or not. Adrenaline's a crazy thing. He could go five properties over and he does that. There's not a chance you're going to recover. Maybe you have a nice neighbor, you know, that hears you shot a deer and gives him back to you in the spring. But, you know, you bump him that far, you're toast. You know, I think My biggest advice, and I'm going to tell one more really quick story here because it's a really good one, and it's a different scenario. I was filming a guy over in Wisconsin last year, muzzleloader season. That was 2 years ago now. And he had a muzzleloader. So now we're talking about a completely different kind of weapon. You know, it's not a gun, not a bow, it's not a crossbow, it's not a rifle. You know, you're throwing a muzzleloader bullet at him, but or a sabot, whatever. So this deer comes out, it's last light. I'm filming this thing. And just to give you an idea of my setup, so I have a big camera on a tripod, zoomed in on the deer, and I have a secondary camera that I'm kind of filming his reaction with. Guy shoots this deer. And all you see now, muzzleloader, you're battling smoke. So another element. So, you know, even on the camera, you can't see a direct impact. But like I'm looking through the lens, I can see the whole front of this deer just ripple. Deer drops down, boom, done. Right there in the, and it's a bean field, right? So I watch him for a second on the big camera and he tries to get back up, falls back down, tries to get back up, falls back down, and then done. Doesn't move. So like we're in a blind. Celebrating. I'm filming with the second camera, his reaction, right? And we celebrate and whatever else, and it gets dark. So the plan is we're going to slip out of there. We're going to go back to the camp there, and we're going to get everybody and come back and recover the deer together. So we go back, and everybody's on a high, and like, yep, deer's laying right there dead in the bean field, right? We take 10 guys out there. We go drive right into the bean field, drive right up to where the deer is. No deer. And we're like, okay, well, it's dark out. Maybe we're just off a little bit. Maybe he's over here. Maybe he's over there. No deer. We're like, well, what the hell happened? We go walk into the woods a little bit, find a little bit of blood, not a lot, but we go in there about 50 yards, nothing. Guy that was there was taking charge. He said, we got to back out. Like, this is a bad situation. It's dark. It's night. We don't know. We got to go back and watch the footage. Well, sure enough, I had left that camera, the big camera, recording while I was over here filming the reaction. That deer, and luckily I did. It's interesting to have, but it's like that deer had got up while we were filming that reaction. Now this thing's laying what I thought was stone dead. Gets up, gets on his feet, gains his composure, runs into the woods. All while we're kind of messing around. This is a couple minutes later. Long story short, we never found that deer. He showed up on camera 3 days later. Hit high in the shoulder. It rippled him, just stoned him, right? He tries to get back up, goes back down, tries to get back up, goes back down, lays there like he's dead, what we thought. 2 minutes later, he gets up, runs off. That deer lived. He's still alive today because they still got trail camera photos of him. But that's a perfect scenario. Like I preach, okay, pay attention. We talk about paying attention to details and using your camera and whatever else. It's so easy to accept what you think you know, right? And in scenario, we messed up. I messed up because we never should have taken 10 guys in there. Now, would it have made a difference because the deer was still alive and he's still alive to this day? Probably not. But still, I look back at that. And I'm like, that was a huge mistake. Like just accepting the fact that that deer was dead and, you know, not moving, just a crazy thing. So my biggest piece of advice is just take yourself out of that moment. And we've talked about it lots during this podcast, but like evaluate and play it cautiously. You know, there's times when, you know, you see him fall over, or you know, you got a good shot or whatever, but like, man, just take yourself out of that moment and set yourself up on the front end, do the research, like figure out what the hit is and what your best chance of finding that deer is, because you can really set yourself up for success or screw it up right away on the front end.
Yeah. And it's hard because you got all that anxiety about, oh, I don't want to lose a deer. You know what I mean?
And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, and I might hit on it. It's really a thing that you have to learn how to look at the big picture, but you also at the same time have to pay very close attention and focus on that small picture, because the small picture is where you're going to get the blood trail and the little signs that you can't see. It's almost like you're shed hunting for blood, you know? But then if you just pay attention to that small sign and you're focused and you're zoned in and don't see the big picture, you can easily miss things that could tell you even more than what you're looking at. So it's like you have to learn how to balance both at the same time while walking through the woods. And it's not easy to follow blood. And I don't know. Were you finished?
Okay. You're good.
You know, going back to like main topics, I actually wrote some stuff down because I love this subject. You know, one of the things you talked about is using logic like really, truly settle down, use logic and think. You know, one of the things is, you know, we've all walked through the woods, whether it be mushroom hunting, whether it be shed hunting, whatever reason. And you look down, you're like, oh, I'm on a deer trail, right? Well, why are you on a deer trail? You're on a deer trail because deer are just like us. The easiest path with the least resistance. We tend to follow them same trails. When I'm scouting, I actually pay close attention to that because if I'm scouting close to season or in season, I don't want to be on that deer trail. I want to be 10 yards off of it, you know, away from that deer trail. But naturally, if you're not paying attention, you find yourself walking on it. And the thing with tracking is, you know, that's one big thing I've always saw that if a deer is following a deer trail, if it's on a deer trail, that's not a good sign. A lot of times that means that deer's thinking, he's using his brain, he's doing what he normally does, which means he's not affected by that shot enough to cause him to do something erratic.
Yeah, and if he's hurt really bad and he's dying, he's looking for that thicket, like I said, or going downhill or doing something or cutting left or cutting right. And JG, I think you had a comment here just a second
ago. Well, I want Dan to roll through his, and okay. Then I got a summary.
So then a few of the things I wanted to hit on really good is, one, even before I consider tracking, you know, I consider preparing prior to season and before the shot part of tracking. One of the big things that I did that changed me too is instead of buying a target or having a target that has white dots on it, find that target that is all black or all brown and it doesn't have an easy spot to pick out, because what you'll teach yourself is when you put that pin on that deer, you tend to do what you've trained your body to do. And if you've trained your body to put it on a white spot on a black target, then you're not going to find that white spot when you're putting it on that deer. And when you're shooting at a deer, you're learning basically all you have is that shoulder to work off of, and you're not really finding a spot. So it gets you used to finding that spot on that target, you know, and identifying it without just having a bright white spot. And, you know, that's one big thing. And the second one I hit on earlier was don't trust your eyes. One of the most important things you can do is from the stand, find the spot. If you have a camera, the camera is incredible for going back and looking at footage and what happened. The other thing I think's good for is you have a phone in your hand. When you're up in that tree stand, take pictures. When you are sitting in that stand and you say that deer was standing right there on the other side of that log, get your phone out and take a picture of that log, zoom in a little closer and take another picture. When you see where the last place that deer ran out of the woods or the last place you see it, take a picture from a distance, zoom in, take another picture. All them things that you try to identify from the stand, when you get down on the ground, it changes. We've all done it, gotten down and been like, wait a minute, where's that log? It don't look the same down there. At least if you can look at your phone, instead of having to get back up in the tree stand and find it again, you can look at your phone and reference those points with your phone while you're on the ground.
And even more so the next day if you let it sit overnight, like Brian was talking about.
Yeah. So, you know, another big thing is, you know, when you're tracking, obviously find the blood. And if somebody says he ran that way, take it with a grain of salt. You know, when I'm tracking deer, a lot of things I pay attention to is what color is the blood? Is it on both sides? Is it spraying out the nose? How high is it on the leaves? I'm looking at, you know, is he stumbling? I've seen deer that, you know, they'll start down a hill and then they'll start going back up the hill and then start down a hill. Well, that deer's probably losing blood pressure and he can't keep going up. He wants to keep going up. That's the direction he wants to go. But when he's going like this on a hillside, that deer's getting ready to die. I mean, when you start seeing multiple beds, deer's dead. When you're watching a deer at 150 yards away and you see that tail start wagging at 100 mile an hour, we know that's a good sign of death, right? You can see which way the blood splattering when it hits the ground. If you can't find hoof prints or whatever to tell you which direction a deer's going, a lot of times you can see where blood splatters. And if that blood is splattering a lot, it might tell you, is he trotting? Is he walking? You know, one of the things with Caitlin's deer, I mean, I've got several deer where it took me somewhere between 3 to 5 days to find the deer. I mean, and I can honestly say, I truly believe this, that I'm pretty sure since I was 25 years old, every single deer that I have tracked that somebody in my family shot, between my close family, my wife, kids, me, if it didn't drop in 30 yards and I didn't see it drop, it usually turned into a two-day experience unless it was a gut shot and I knew it and waited till the next day. But with that being said, every single one of those deer I either found within 4 to 5 days through a grid search, through blood, through whatever, or I had it on trail camera within 2 weeks. And, you know, then that goes back to another thing is I'm sure there's plenty of systems out there. I use Onyx, to be honest, but they have tracking. That tracking, where it tracks your footsteps and where you've been, is one of the most useful things I've ever had. And the reason is if I start tracking a deer, I hit track. When I go home and lay down at night, instead of just laying there looking at the serum with my eyes wide open, thinking about that buck, I'm looking at the terrain. I'm looking at what I've covered, what I've searched. Caitlin's deer, the only reason I found it, it ran 300 yards across the field, bedded in 3 beds, and then was gone with blood in the beds. And I knew this deer's fatal. This deer's dead. Why isn't it laying here? Well, there was snow on the ground. When it got up, the first thing I noticed was his hoof tracks were farther apart. I thought, wow, that's incredible. Well, why is he running now? What scared him? Started searching, found coyote tracks. Coyotes had got on this deer and ran it another 400 or 500 yards. Now, then I backtracked them coyotes and found the deer I was hunting that year that the neighbor had shot and hadn't found it. And I found that for him and called him and got him that. But then it was another 2 or 3 days before we finally found her deer. The only reason I found her deer was I got on that track and I looked from where that deer was shot to where he ran and bedded down. And I started looking through the terrain, the height and everything, and considering that deer is sick. And I figured out that deer, if he keeps going, he's heading right in this direction. And that told me, looking at that map, I need to cross grid this way. I knew that I didn't have to go here or here because this was, you know, uphill, this was downhill. But I could see by looking at the map at a big look which direction that deer. And I knew the terrain of the area pretty well too. So, I mean, that's another big kicker. There's just so much to it, I guess. But and then to tell a real quick story, this year it actually happened and it was pretty cool. And this may be part of the reason I enjoy tracking so much is because it is one of the most rewarding things to have buddies that have a deer they've been hunting, regardless of size, regardless of anything, that they're just passionate about. And then they finally make it happen. And then they spend 2 or 3 days looking for this deer and can't find it, you know, and then you go over there and help them and make it happen. It makes you a small part of that. It is a very rewarding thing. And a good buddy of mine this year, he shot his first big buck with a bow. Turned out to be 183 inches. And he told us, he didn't get it on film, but he told us, I got to be honest, I was so excited, I center masked him. And I said, well, it happens. That's fine. You know, I said, they'd already searched for it for 2 or 3 days in the snow. Never found the first bit of blood. The arrow was covered in blood from tip to tip. Not much bubbles on it, maybe a couple tiny ones, but not enough to say lungs or anything like that. Never had the first bit of blood until about 150 yards away, there was a bed with blood in it. Now, going back a day, him and another buddy looked for this deer for 2 days. The first, they left it lay for 15 hours. This deer, they left that night, never looked for it or anything, left it sit for 15 hours in this bed. They came back the next morning maybe in the evening, I think, and they came back and started following his tracks. They followed his tracks all the way to that bed. The deer stood up, ran 10 yards, and Jeremy even showed me footage of this. The deer walking. I mean, we're talking February, like a few days before season ended, and maybe February 1st or something in Ohio. And he showed me the footage. I looked at it. My neighbor, who's very knowledgeable, looked at it. Jeremy looked at it. We all looked at it like, that deer don't look wounded. That deer looks fine. He's walking like he's got a chip on his shoulder, you know, like he's got a stance to him. And he walked across this field. Now, they told me that and they showed me the footage and everything. And I said, well, you mind if I come look a little while? And I went up there and I looked at the bed. There was absolutely no blood. We got permission to get on another property and look a little bit. We looked And we found absolutely nothing. I found one leg that had been chewed up. Of course, I went down to the creek and walked it all the way back, and I found a young buck, a little buck that was dead for a little while, and I'm sure that's what that leg was from. Go back to the truck, and I leave and go home. We got an ice storm coming in 2 days, one of the worst ice storms we've had in 10 years in Ohio. And I'm laying in bed thinking about this deer, and I said, I got an arrow covered in blood. We got a bed 150 yards away with that deer sitting 15 hours. Deer don't sit in a bed for 15 hours unless something's wrong, seriously wrong, especially through the night. And I just started thinking about it. And then I started thinking, if you take a deer and you take that deer from shoulder to shoulder. Now, we know that he shot this deer. It was a complete pass through. The arrow was laying on the ground just like that, and it was blood tip to tip. That tells me that there's a great chance that there wasn't like meaty fat, muscle, nothing on it, that he probably is right. He probably came pretty darn close to a center mass shot, but it doesn't make sense. Why isn't this deer dead? Anyway, so they're looking for this deer, and I know that he's got a perfect pass through, or he's got a complete pass through on this deer. Now, we don't know exactly where it is, but we know it's somewhere between the hip and the shoulder, the back and the stomach, and it's a pass through, blood tip to tip, no oxygen, no bubbles on the blood, so we're thinking, probably doesn't have oxygen on it. And I'm just laying in bed thinking about this every night, and I'm just thinking, doesn't make sense. And I think about it, and I'm like, if you think about a deer, and you think about just statistics alone, if you take a deer, and these aren't science numbers, these aren't exact numbers, but I'm guesstimating, from the front shoulder, the back of the front shoulder, to the hip, to the back, to the stomach, if you have a complete pass-through, there's a good chance you didn't hit shoulder, hip, or anything that would stop that arrow, because the arrow's not damaged, so you know that you probably hit it in between there. Well, if you look at all the organs in there, my guesstimate would be that at all that space, 100% of that space, only 30% of it doesn't have vital organs. Like 75% probably, that's 70 to 75% of that part of the body has vital organs. So that tells you statistically, if you pass an arrow through that body, you have a 70 to 75% chance of it killing that deer. To me, that's a good percentage. That's a percentage worth putting a lot of time in looking for, right? So even if you don't have blood, there's something's got to, it doesn't make sense. And then you even go one step farther and think about it. Well, now compare the vitals versus the vitals that he's going to die in 5 to 10 minutes versus the vital that it could take anywhere from 30 minutes to 2 or 3 days. There's history of 2 or 3 days deer living. So then you look at that and you're like, well, the vitals that are going to kill him instantly are probably only 25 to 30% of that space. And then you have 70 to 75% of the vitals that may kill them in 3 or 4 days. So when I look at them statistics, it's a simple math. I'm thinking, okay, well, we have a great percentage of them being dead, but we have a low percentage of him dying tonight. So that tells me, yeah, I'm definitely going to look for him, but I'm going to be on more high alert. There's a 70% chance I'm going to say, no, let's give it till tomorrow or 24 hours or 36 hours before we go in because we don't want to bump them. So either way, going to that thought process, I called Adam the next day and I'm like, Adam, I can't do this. I said, we are getting ready to have an ice storm. I said, you're not going to find that deer with birds until it warms up a little bit. Who knows if you'll ever find it. It's on somebody else's property. We need to get permission to get on that extra property. I said, look, I've looked at the maps. That deer went high as soon as you hit him. He was in a bottom. He ran straight up the hill. And everything I know of, I'm looking at the terrain, he's followed the top of this hillside around. Now, he could have immediately went down to water, but he didn't. He stayed high. Now, why did he stay high? Well, that starts running through my mind. And this is where I'm saying, when you're tracking, don't only think of what it is or how it is. Why is it that way? Why is that deer doing that? Why is he bleeding like that? Why doesn't he want to go to water? Why is he trying to stay high on the hillside? And I even come up with ideas that who knows if they're true, but I start thinking about thermals. Well, if a deer's bleeding and he knows that we're not his biggest enemy. His biggest enemy is a coyote. Coyotes are better trackers than we are, So maybe he's in his thought process, I don't want to bed low. I want to bed high up on the hillside because coyotes are probably running them hillsides just like they are when they're trying to smell for does. They're smelling for food and everything else, Maybe it is that or maybe it's not. But either way, he stayed high the whole time. He did not want to go low. And I told Adam, I said, think about this. That deer never bled from the start. I said, there's only one thing I know of that you can pass an arrow through a deer and it not bleed, not one drop in the snow. I said, that's gut. I said, it packed them holes immediately. That means you filled, you hit his gut and it packed them holes immediately. He laid for 15 hours. I said, there's deer do not lay for 15 hours unless there's something wrong. So he agreed with me. He said, all right, well, if you're willing, we'll go out tomorrow. I said, can you get another buddy? He said, yeah. So he brought another buddy. I went over the maps. I looked at him real good. And we got permission to get on a property. And I told him, I said, well, we know where we've looked already. And I said, what I want to do is I will cover the top hillside. I said, you cover the middle. I said, you need to stay within eyesight from me the whole time. I used my tracker on my GPS or my Onyx, and his buddy stayed down. So I was top. He was about a third of the way down the hill and then two thirds of the way downhill. We were going to cover all that around, and then we're going to come back and cover the bottom half the same way. An hour into it, his buddy just walked right up on it. 183-inch deer. I mean, and it was just a matter of I couldn't get over it. I said, I can't. I said, I can't walk away from this. I feel like that deer's dead. And, you know, it was just logic and what my heart told me. But I guess my thing is the biggest thing I take out of tracking is don't give up. You've put so much time and effort into hunting a deer like that. Don't just give, especially that time of year. You're not going to get on another deer. Don't give up and walk away. And please don't say, I don't want to mess up my area, because you're worried about the next deer already, unless you know that deer's dead.
Yeah. The point that stuck out to me on that was that percentage thing. That's great information. And don't give up. I mean, that's a great, great point. You know, if you got 70% chance that the animal's going to die, just look at the statistics, you know. It's if you don't hit that perfect vital and it doesn't die right away, don't give up. That's just great, great advice.
Yeah, and just thinking about all these stories, I'm sure we could have a whole nother podcast.
Oh,
but
goodness.
I think the thing I take away is, you know, be careful right away, be cautious. And one thing I was thinking about as Dan was telling that story is, you know, whether it's our hunts or other hunts, you know, a lot of times we're whispering after the shot and people, for some reason, just like hate that and comment, why are you whispering? Why are you whispering? You know, well, there's a reason. We're trying to, you know, give ourselves the best chance of finding the deer. We're not trying to blow our area up. We're not trying to tell the deer we're here. We're a predator. You know, we're trying to be quiet. We don't know exactly what happened. We're not 100% sure. So when we're whispering in the tree after we shot, there's a reason. We're not just trying to like have the deer come back into our, you know, it doesn't make sense. And I'm kind of just more of a low-key type hunter and strategy in general. So I'm always quiet with everything I do, but I'm not a fan of the yelling and hooting and hollering right after a deer shot, because you just never know.
Last summer, going back to that, a buddy of mine shot a deer that I helped him track, and we were very quiet tracking it, and we walked right up on it. We walked within 100 yards. We were coming down the hillside, and we looked up, and he's standing on the hillside on the other side, and I put my binoculars up, and I said, I can see right where you hit him. You gut shot him. And I said, well, we're in for the long haul. He's like, what do you mean? I said, well, we're going to sit here and wait. And he's like, okay. So we sat down for 3 hours and just this deer finally bedded down right there. And we literally watched him, you know, die. I mean, you know, and unfortunately it was a situation we both were like, we felt terrible because we'd have loved to just get closer and put an arrow in him. But we knew if we try to get closer, we take a chance of him bumping. And at least right now we know exactly where he's at.
Yeah. And why would you want to be screaming and yelling and having that adrenaline push that deer, and you don't know how tough that deer is? Doesn't matter how good you shoot the deer. I mean, we've all heard stories of double lung shots and the deer, or single lung shots for sure, and the deer lived, you know. I mean, so yeah, why would you scream and get that adrenaline pumping in that deer? It just, I'm not that person either. I get excited, but I'm like, oh yeah, 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 you know, but I'm whispering. And so that makes great sense too.
Well, lots of stories I'm sure that we could tell, about 100 more. Maybe we'll have to do a follow-up and talk about, you know, specific shots and different arrow placements and things like that. But, you know, by no means are we experts, but we've all had a lot of different experiences. And like we talked about, I think that the more information you can gather, the more experiences that you can have, even from other people, you know, that gives you more knowledge and more information for when sometime you might be in that situation. So hopefully, you know, this fall you're out there hunting and you can use some of this information when you're going to track a deer, and don't give up. Hopefully you recover that deer, whether it's 10 seconds later or it's 2 days later. So appreciate you listening. If you haven't subscribed, make sure you subscribe on YouTube or download the Deer Society app. It's free. Dan, appreciate you coming in. Some good stuff coming from Dan this fall. Some killer hunt breakdowns, really, really good content. So make sure you pay attention to the Deer Society app. And we'll catch you next time.
You mind if I say one more thing to top it off?
Top it off.
Don't be afraid. One of the best things in the camaraderie that comes with hunting that I've found is helping friends find other deer. Don't be afraid to call a buddy and say, hey, you want an extra set of eyes? Take the time out of your day to go help them. You will learn so much. And the camaraderie that comes with finding somebody else's trophy and being a part of helping them with that is beyond so much. I mean, it's been great. And if you live in Ohio and close to me, don't be afraid to hit me up. I'll do everything I can to help another hunter. So
there you have it. Dan Coffin, 997-623.
The Deer Society's success has been built on great partnerships with great product makers, such as Illusion Systems, maker of the Extinguisher Deer Call, the Black Rack Rattling System, and the Phase Body Odor System, Tacticam and Reveal, Osseo Gear, 10 Point Crossbows, Burris Optics, Huiman, and Big Frig.